who came in from the cold. It's all about the writer's life and how his life turned a creative corner at the mid-century point. We'll get to Ben right after Jeff Basham and the Outbeat Radio News and Calendar. Let's go there now.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Welcome to Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, June 16th, 2013. I'm Jeff Basham, sitting in for the vacationing Greg Maralia. Wineries are coming out loud and proud in their support of gay marriage. They're putting it right on the label. Little by little, we're breaking down the barrier, says Gary Saperstein of Out in the Vineyard, an events and tour company based in Sonoma that caters to gay travelers. One of the barrier breakers is same-sex maritage, a red blend that sends its message on the bottle and at the cash register. $1 for every bottle sold is donated to the advocacy group Freedom to Marry. Maritage is a brand name that refers to a Bordeaux-style blend, and of course, it sounds a lot like marriage. From Napa-based Stand Tall Wines, there's Genetic Pinot Noir, which refers to sexual orientation having genetic origins. The wine is being made in the Napa Valley using grapes shipped from Oregon's Willamette Valley, and 1% of genetic sales is being donated to the Napa LGBTQ Project. And though it doesn't have a message-specific label, Barefoot Wine and Bubbly has been supporting marriage rights for gays for 25 years, donating to local LGBT centers and other organizations, investing in Pride Week events, even putting up a 20-foot-tall inflatable wedding cake in front of San Francisco's City Hall in support of gay marriage. And this week on the LGBT calendar of events, Monday, June 17th, and every Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Petaluma Health Center will host the LGBT Support Group at 1179 North McDowell Boulevard in Petaluma in the Serenity Room. The group is for all who identify as LGBT or are questioning their sexuality and/or gender. Also Monday from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Jesse's Parent Support Group will meet at Positive Images, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. The Parent Support Group is led by Jesse, who speaks both English and Spanish. On Tuesday, June 18th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., the Trans Group will meet at Positive Images. Trans-identified and questioning individuals and their families and friends are invited. On Tuesday, June 20th, 9:30 to 11 a.m., Spectrum will host the Novato Senior Breakfast at Sam's Place, 1545 South Novato Boulevard in Novato. This is a self-facilitated group for men and women who are at least 50. Also Thursday, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Men for Men Support Group will gather at Marin AIDS Project, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. This is an ongoing drop-in peer support group for all gay-identified men. And on Sunday, June 23rd, Napa Valley Wine Country Tours will sponsor the Wine for Dine Winery Tour to benefit Food for Thought, Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank. Up to 30 guests will travel in a limo bus, a veritable lounge on wheels, with all the features and luxury of a limousine. The tour will visit four wineries, Red Car, Kendall Jackson Wine Center, Sagacio, and the historic Hop Kiln. More details at fftfoodbank.org. Tickets available via phone at 707-226-3333. And don't forget the new hours for rapid HIV testing at Face to Face in Santa Rosa, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Results are available in just 20 minutes.
What if I told you that you could get peace of mind in just 20 minutes, and it's free? If you've ever wondered if you contracted HIV and aren't sure, you can get tested for free, confidentially, and anonymously with results in just 20 minutes. Call Face to Face at 544-1581 or visit f2f.org. Face-to-Face, ending AIDS in Sonoma County, 20 minutes at a time.
This has been the Outbeat Radio News. With Jerry Carnevale at the editor's desk, I'm Jeff Basham, sitting in for the vacationing Greg Maroglia. Happy Gay Pride.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Ben Thomas has been a writer since he was a teenager and now writes gay romance novels and novellas as B.G. Thomas. His amazing new book, The Boy Who Came In From the Cold, is spending a nice period of time at the top of Amazon's LGBT bestseller list. The prolific writer of 3 novels in 3 years lives in Kansas City with his partner of also 3 years. Ben joins us from the Heartland on the phone to talk about his work. Hello, Ben. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
I'm great. Congratulations on the success of The Boy Who Came In From the Cold.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure. Talk about the book itself and what its success means to you as a writer.
Oh, boy. It's a dream come true. I mean, I can't even begin to express. My whole life, this has been what I wanted, and I was just too afraid to pursue it. And then I finally took that leap. And waited, and I just can't get over how well it's done. It's been a miracle.
Well, it's a great book. It's a great book, and you're really a talented writer, which
well, thank you.
Which I've known for a couple decades. And I read.
Well, that's older than we are. You can't have been that long.
I read your book in 3 sittings and found myself fully absorbed by both its engaging plot and its interesting characters, both lead characters and minor characters alike. How do you go about creating such realistic characters and storylines and then get them onto the page?
Well, boy, I draw a lot from friends, my own life, things like that. It's kind of hard to explain. They just spring to my head. Didn't they say Athena came out of the forehead of Zeus or something like that? That's what it reminds me of. They come to me sometimes in dreams. Sometimes it's really neat. I'll just be typing along, and my characters will be in a coffee shop, and I know that they've got to buy their coffee from the lady at the register, and all of a sudden, I know her name, I know what she looks like, I know what her glasses look like, and she just starts. The dialogue just starts springing out of her mouth, and I'm just typing as fast as I can to keep up with what she's saying. Some of the characters have been around for 30 years. Some of the characters are brand new. It's just a mixture of all different kinds of things.
So you've been working with these characters for a long time.
Some of them are really old. The character who stars in the real hero, the boy who came in from the cold, his story began in the 90s. I was writing some erotica. I was reading a story in a magazine, and just the grammar was horrible. And, I mean, this was a top-color, top-looking men's magazine. And I said to my partner at the time, this is just wretched. I could write better than this. And he said, well, you know, I'm tired of hearing you say that. Do it. So I said, well, fine. And I wrote a story, and I sent it in, and to my shock, it sold. And I was very happy. But over the next year or so, as I was writing these stories, the thing that really disappointed me is that they kept hacking out the beginning of the story and just taking it right to the sex. And there's not a thing wrong with sex, but I don't think it's hot if you don't believe in
right.
the people who are having the sex. Otherwise, it's just something you could read a dirty
right.
letter off the internet, right?
Right. No emotional connection with the character.
And so I wrote this story that I was very deeply personally involved in, that had sort of been inspired by the fact that one night my spouse and I came home to our apartment building, and it was snowing like you would not believe, and there was this kid waiting in the lobby. And we looked at him kind of funny. It was a small little lobby between the outer doors and the inner doors, and he told us that someone had let him in out of the cold and that he was waiting for a ride. And we go upstairs, and we start talking, and we neither one of us believed the theft was really the case. We figured he was a local hustler.
Mm.
So finally, I don't know what struck me, but I made him some hot chocolate, and I went downstairs with it, and he was gone. And so to this day, I hope that what happened was he was telling me the truth. He was just waiting for a ride. But even if that's not the truth, I just hope he's okay. And a story was born.
Mm.
And I wrote that story and sent it in, and they wanted it, and they hacked out the beginning of the story.
Mm.
So I was that was the end of it, right? Well, for years, since, 96, 97, that story has spoken to me, and that character has, like, whispered to me in, you know, the corners of my mind, wanting his real story told.
Mm.
And when I started selling stories to Dream Center Press, I went, oh, my gosh, this is finally my chance to tell the real story, where maybe the sex scene is important, but it's a teeny tiny little part of his real story.
Right.
That's where it came from.
Wow. Wow. I mean, what's most impressive about your book, and I read a lot of LGBT fiction, is the manner in which, despite the fact that your book is sort of categorized as gay romance, you don't shy away from the reality of queer life, you know, such as the perils of coming out, persistent homophobia, and the continued threat of HIV/AIDS. Why is it important for you as a writer to tackle these issues when so many other LGBT novelists and filmmakers even would rather sort of ignore them?
Well, I think a big part of it is that that's what's important to me.
Hmm.
It's what's important to me as a man and a gay man.
Right.
A big part... I denied that I was gay for a long time. I was raised Southern Baptist. And I can't believe I got to, like, 19 and didn't realize I was gay. I would try and pretend I was an artist, and an artist can appreciate a man's body or something like that. And even then, after I realized I was gay, I still went back in the closet for years. And at 30, finally came out. And at that point, I realized that I was not going to deny who I was and who queer people are and the whole GLBT community. And so when I started writing stories 3 years ago, I thought, I've got to tell the stories of who these people really are. And so much of what I read is, it sort of glosses over or hides things, mm-hmm. or that, or does the opposite. It dwells on the dark.
Right, right.
And there's certainly been dark in my life. I lost so many friends. But there's been wonders and joys and triumphs. And so I try and tell all those stories.
Hmm.
Does that answer the question?
It does, certainly, certainly. Right. You know, all those colors of the rainbow flag, you know, could represent sort of emotions.
I like that. I'm going to remember. Can I put that in the story?
You may. I was explaining to my partner, who were you on the phone with for nearly 3 hours the other night? And I'm like, that's my friend from high school. And, you know, we were out together, you know, we used to go bar hopping together, you know, when we first sort of came out. But he's like, well, what does he do? I'm like, well, he writes books. He's like, what kind of books? I'm like, well, the genre is gay romance. And he's like, what is that? And I said, well, you know, I tried to explain it to him, and, you know, I'm like, you know, don't, you know, he was, you know, kind of poo-pooing it and like, oh, like a harlequin. And I was like, well, you know, not this book, you know, I would consider this just LGBT fiction. Talk about the genre and how your publisher, Dream Spinner Press, has really become so profitable.
Well, boy, that's a huge question. There's so many answers to that. Let me say first that the lady who's... Let me tell you this part first. The lady Elizabeth, mm-hmm. one of the most amazing women I have ever met in my entire life, a heterosexual woman, and who has a Unity minister license. Her husband's brother is gay and was getting married to a man in a state where they could get married, and they asked her to preside.
Hmm.
And so off she went there to preside. In the morning of the wedding, she was out at the pool or the hotel where they were going to perform the ceremony, and she notices that her future brother-in-law is reading a Harlequin romance. And she walks up to him and she says, okay, there's something wrong with this picture. And he said, well, there's nothing for our community. And she says, what do you mean? And he says, well, all the books are like Brokeback Mountain. They might be great stories, but everybody dies at the end. And I want to read happy stories. I've survived all these things. I'm getting married to the man of my dreams. I've survived all this stuff, and my life's a triumph. I want to celebrate that. And there's no companies that are producing those books. And she didn't believe him. And she goes home, and she starts investigating, and she finds out there isn't. And so she and a group of friends and a financial time where it was ridiculous for her even contemplate starting a company that produces gay books.
Right, when other publishers have folded or they've...
And one of the most wonderful book chains that we have, A Different Light, is going out of business.
Right.
She decides to start a company celebrating gay life. They just celebrated their sixth year. They are doing phenomenally well. And luckily, halfway through it, 3 years ago, I managed to jump on. And I really think that the heart of what this is all about is it's not Harlequin romances.
Mm-hmm.
Because truly, the heart of every great story, there's a romance. I mean, Indiana Jones movies, there's a romance. You know, think of some of your favorite movies. There's a romance in the heart of them.
Right.
They're not romance movies, but there's a romance.
Mm-hmm.
So what this company is producing, and a lot of other companies, not just Dream Spinner, but a lot of these wonderful companies, is they're producing stories about gay people, and they get to fall in love with a man instead of, you know, Indiana Jones is falling in love with Marvin Ravenswood instead of Marion Ravenswood.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my stories, there might be a romance in the story, but to call them romances, I think it sort of diminishes them. Because when we hear romance, what do we think of? We think of those Harlequin romances our mom used to read, or those Barbara Cartland.
Right. The bodice rippers. And
right. Except in this case, you'll be, well, I don't know what jockstrap rippers, you know. Yes, there's romance, and yes, you'll find a hot sex scene, but, I mean, like, in my book, All Alone in a Sea of Romance, it's, what, like 300 pages, and I think there's 10 pages of sex. So if you're buying it for the porn,
right.
You bought the wrong book.
Right. Statistics are showing that people seem to be reading less and less. Your readers mostly purchase your books online and in electronic form. Tell us how well this works for you.
Well, it's working very well for me. I'm not a millionaire or anything, but I can't get over how in just 3 years I've gotten from someone that no one has heard from in the field to someone who, well, I celebrated 11 days, number one with my book, The Boy Who Came In From the Cold, as number one on Amazon's 4 different lists. They're gay literature, they're gay and romance literature, they're 4 different lists. Okay.
Right. Sort of.
And I'm
yeah.
sitting there just stunned and amazed and so very grateful. My dreams are coming true. I can't believe it. I can't believe I waited so long. I was so afraid to try. You know, you said that people are reading a lot less. Okay, Mark Twain said it, and I'm going to mess it up right now, but he said something about there's two kinds of statistics. I'm going to mess it up, Gary. Something about there's... I'm sorry, I'm going to ruin it. But
Mary is saying there are three kinds. But
well, it all turns out that statistics are lies. That's
what it really means. Right.
Is that... I don't think statistics are really true because, look, this teeny little company has exploded. They just celebrated their sixth year. They're making
an incredible lot
of money. I don't know what I'm authorized to say. And it started with a handful of people who thought this is wrong. There should
right.
be novels out there that celebrate love
mm-hmm.
instead of the guy gets beaten up with a crowbar at the end of the story.
Right, and we're going to make it happen, and we're going to make that happen. How many authors and titles can you find on Dream Spinner Press?
Well, just Dream Spinner. Okay, when I signed on 3 years ago, we were at about 100, I guess, and they have 500 people signed on. I mean,
right.
Does that sound statistically like people are not reading as much?
No, certainly not. Certainly not. So talk about what happened 3 years ago and how you felt. Just something really big happened. I'll leave it up to you just before your 50th birthday. But talk about that transition from a dream and then realizing that dream.
All right. I heard an inspirational speaker who is one of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life. And he was talking about the fact that every person has something that they're supposed to be doing. And he said, the way you know what you're supposed to be doing is by when you do it, he said, have you ever done something where you feel like you're plugged into an electric socket in the wall? And then he gave this list of things. He said, it might be gardening. Mm. It might be raising children. It might be painting. It might be dancing. It might be singing. He said, no matter what it is, when you're doing that thing, whatever it could be, it's like something, this power is coming to you, and you don't even know where it's coming from. And I said earlier, you were asking me about characters, and I was saying, I don't even know where they come from.
Hmm.
So as he's talking, tears start streaming down my face. And I'm thinking, it's that the answer to that question is when I write. And sometimes I'll write a story, and I'll look back at it 3 years later, 5 years later, and I'll go, wow, I wrote that? And I don't mean that as a bragging thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that. I want to make that very clear that that is not what I mean. But I'm just shocked that that came out of my brain. And so I went home, and I Googled, and I found publishers that were publishing what I wanted to write, which was good, honest, human stories about people who happen to be gay. I didn't want to write about Indiana Jones and Marion Ravenswood. I wanted to write about Indiana Jones and Marvin Ravenwood, you know, and there had been no market for that, and to my shock, I discovered there was a market. And a friend of mine named Angela Sparrow, who is a wonderful, wonderful writer, check her out, amazing, she helped me, and I found out that Dream Spinner Press was looking for, they had an open submission call. And they were asking for a specific kind of story. And so I wrote a story, and I sent it in, and I got to email it in. And it took a lot of nerve, but I kept hearing that man speak to me about, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent that story in, and I got the standard email response that said, if you don't hear from us in 4 to 6 weeks, right, you know, then, you know, get back with us. Don't call us, we'll call you, right? 4 days later, I get a contract. And it was 2 days before my 50th birthday.
Wow.
And I just couldn't believe it. I'd told the story in 4 days. And that was 3 years ago last month. I've sold 19 stories, including 3 novels. They have all but basically contracted from me through 2014.
Hmm.
They really believed in me, and I think them believing in me made me believe in me.
Hmm.
But Gary, I was so shocked when I got an email from a friend that said, have you checked the Amazon Gay Top 100? And I said, well, no. And they said, well, I think you need to Google that. Okay. And I did. And the book that had been out for 4 days was number one.
Wow.
It stayed there for 11 days. It was on Amazon UK for 6 days. Hmm. Number one.
Wow.
It's still in the top 6 or 7 in 3 years.
That's amazing.
And if I can take a moment to say this, it's really, really, really important for me to say this.
Absolutely.
whoever you are, no matter what your thoughts are, no matter what your dreams are, it is not too late. You can get what you are dreaming for. I heard a wonderful singer named Christine Kane. She did this song, and she quotes a Buddhist Zen proverb that is called, it goes like this: leap and the net will appear. And so that's what I did. The whole time I wrote that first story, that song played over and over and over and over again. And I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to believe. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leap off that cliff and know that I'm not going to plummet to my death. The net's going to appear. And it did.
Right.
And I so want people to know, it's so important for me to tell people that your dream can come true as long as you believe in yourself.
Mm. That's a beautiful message.
And that's what I've been doing. I've been believing in myself, and it's happening.
Right.
And I hope it keeps happening. I think I know it's going to keep happening. I know each book is just going to get bigger and bigger.
So what are you working on now?
Okay, well, I have finished the spinoff of The Boy Who Came In From the Cold.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited when I would get emails asking what happened to the friend that Todd left behind in the itty-bitty little town he came from. And I was thrilled because that's the next book, and that comes out in September. It's called Anything Could Happen.
Hmm.
And I had to be careful on what I say on the next book. I'm learning to not talk about it too much because somebody might jump in and take it. But it's a lot of fun.
Ah.
It is about two men who have decided, because of circumstances in their life, that they do not, the last thing in the world they need is somebody else.
Hmm.
And they meet, and the attraction is immediate, and they're trying to deny it because depending on someone else has always hurt them.
Hmm.
And so they're taking a big chance, and both of them finally decide to leap. And of course, it's romance, so the net's going to appear.
So you mentioned the next book is a spinoff, and people might not be familiar what a spinoff means in literary terms as far as novels
okay.
go.
All right. Well, rather than a sequel, whereas the story ends and you're waiting to find out what happens next, and the next book ends where the last one left off, that's a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened in this field is people are reading, a lot of times people are reading this book because they want to watch the two people fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds them of how exciting it is to fall in love.
Mm.
And, you know, everything they go through before they finally admit they love each other and get their happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people want sequels. What happens to them next?
Right.
And what they've discovered is, well, when you write a sequel to that kind of a story, the only way you can write a sequel is to do things like break them up and put them back together, and that turns into As the World Turns, and and you don't, oh, God, that's just too much, right?
Right.
So instead, what has proved to be a wonderful thing, and it was right up my alley because this is what I've done since I was, well, really young, is you do a spinoff. So, mm-hmm. for instance, in The Boy Who Came In From the Cold, our story is about Todd and Gabe, and Todd leaves behind a best friend in the little town that he comes from. In the next story, it's about that guy that he left behind, who moves the little town that he came from to come to Kansas City to try and find Todd, because he realizes that's who he's in love with, and in the meanwhile, all these adventures happen to him, and he finds someone else.
Mm.
Now, in that same process, the last couple of chapters, Todd shows up. So we get to see that Todd is still happy and he's still going on strong and everything is really good, and the two of them forge an even better relationship and friendship because of this. And we focused on a different set of characters.
Mm-hmm.
In the book that's coming out in September, there's a little cameo appearance by a guy who has the nickname of Hound Dog, and he's the star of the next book.
Ah.
So in the next book, we'll find out that Todd and Gabe are still together, and Austin and Guy are still together, you know, et cetera.
Right.
Is that making sense?
Oh, absolutely.
So that's
what
a spinoff is compared to a sequel.
Well, that creative mind of yours just amazes me.
Well,
that you plant these characters and then
happens by accident.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You fall in love with the characters and you think that here's a big story. Here's a novel.
So,
great. So, tell us about queer life in Kansas City. In such a conservative state, what will it take for marriage equality, employment protection, and full acceptance to become a reality for you folks?
I figure I'll answer that question in two ways. First, I'll go logistically. Logistically, you're going to say it's going to be a long time.
Right.
It's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
But for goodness sakes, Illinois looks like it might be about to pass gay marriage.
Right, right, where we're from. Mm-hmm.
When did the first state pass gay marriage? Was it even 10 years ago?
No, not even 10 years ago.
Did you expect this, Gary?
No.
All right, so what I'm going to do, okay, is I'm going to answer your question this way. I'm going to hold up as my highest value that my spouse and I are going to be able to legally get married within the next, I'm going to claim this, we're going to be able to legally get married in my state in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make one correction on you. At the beginning, you said Raymond and I have been together for 3 years. We're almost 13.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Oh, that's not why
that's
I corrected
awful.
You. I was wanting to say
no, you should
I'm
correct
so proud
me.
Of him.
Right.
He is the best man in the world, and sometimes what you think is the best partner for you isn't. Because I had what I thought, oh girl, I had what I thought was the best partner for me, and that was not true.
Not right.
I mean, exciting and well learned and world traveled and hot in bed and all of this stuff, and turned out to be none of that. All that was a mask. And then there's this man, this sweet little man who probably comes from the town where Todd comes from, and the boy who came in from the cold.
Mm-hmm.
And he is my bedrock.
Wow. That's so
I,
nice.
Just recently, in December, got a full knee replacement. And I couldn't get out of bed on my own.
Mm.
And he was there every moment, waiting on me, hand and foot.
Mm.
And, you know, in the scheme of things, that's what I want in my life.
Right, right.
And I drifted from your question. My real question, what is queer life like in Kansas City? It's surprisingly wonderful.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly powerful. We made a mistake and we went commercial for a couple of years, and that was really bad.
Mm.
And Gay Pride this year was very, very small, and it was beautiful, and it was wonderful, and it was powerful. And I was seeing couples, Gary, that could not have been older than 14 or 15 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Right, right.
And I looked at that, and I went, oh, my God. What an exciting time to live in.
That's great. And that's great to hear in Pride Month for all of us.
Isn't that what Pride really means?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All ages. So where can folks get a hold of your book and learn more about you?
Well, if you go to Dream Spinner Press and you check under authors for B.G. Thomas, not only will you get a short little bio and you'll get everything they've produced, which is most of my stuff, but I've been published by about five authors.
Mm-hmm.
By about five publishers. But they've bought most of my stuff, and a big part of that is that's who I want to publish me. They are amazing. I've been talking to you about them. They're incredible. And they've been so supportive that I write the next story, and that's who I want to send it to.
Wow, wow.
I think I'm reaching a point where I could probably sell to any of these publishers that I wanted.
Right.
But I don't want to sell it to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you go to Dream Spinner Press, there's that little bar where you can click on authors.
Right.
And then click on B.G. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And not only will it give you a little bio on me and the books that I have through them,
yeah,
but it will give you every possible link you could want from me. Use my live journal, my website, my email address.
Great.
Everything else.
Great. Ben, it's been a thrill reconnecting with you and having you join us tonight on Outbeat Radio.
Thank you, Gary. You just don't. This was another dream.
Excellent. We wish you continued success with The Boy You Came In From the Cold.
Please
stay in touch with us, and we'll have you back to chat about your next book.
Thank you, Gary. I will look forward to it.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too.
After a musical break, we'll be joined by Christopher and Laura. But first, let's have a listen to Vampire Weekend and its gay lead singer and songwriter, Rustem Batmanji, from the band's new disc, Modern Vampires in the City. This is Obvious Bicycle.
Mornings come, you watch the red sunrise. The LED still flickers in your eyes. All you ought to spare, face the razor, because no one's gonna spare time for you. No one's gonna watch you as you go from a house you didn't build and can't control. Oh, you ought to spare your face the razor, because no one's gonna spare the time for you. You ought to spare the world you labor. It's been 20 years and no one's told the truth. So listen.
And we're happy to have with us this evening Sonoma State University Class of 2013 graduate, Christopher Romo. With him is Laura Green. She is currently a sophomore at Sonoma State. They both are involved in some exciting things happening at the university, but I also wanted to bring them in for their generational perspective as young adults at this time in history where we're all having the issues of outgrowing our own ideas, where the world is kind of shape-shifting before our very eyes. And many are very pessimistic about what all of that means, but many are very optimistic as well. So I wanted to get their insights as young 20-somethings, as people who are going to be going into the next 40 or 50 years. And really happy to say to both Chris and Laura, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Gary, why don't you take that first question? So, Chris, anyway, congratulations on graduating. I'm sure that's a huge sigh of relief.
Absolutely,
on your shoulders.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
And give us a sense of what it feels like now to not have to worry about final exams. And
It feels good.
Does it?
But yeah. I never really, I didn't try too much in school. I just kind of let it happen.
Did you?
Yes.
And your degree is in?
Communications.
Good. Good. And what do you hope to do with that at some point?
Nothing, actually. I'm hoping to go into food service management.
Aha. Very good.
So why communications?
Why communications? Not a lot of math. And it worked out.
Excellent. That's a really good reason.
It became a very interesting topic, I will say.
Very good. Very good. Laura, how about you?
I have a business major at the moment, and I actually picked that up with working in the food service industry through Sonoma State as well.
Good. And you have a particular goal in mind, or?
I actually really like Sonoma State right now, so maybe I'll stay there forever.
Are you both born and raised here in Sonoma?
No. We are both repping Southern California.
Ah, absolutely.
There you go. There you go. Well, welcome to our side of the state. So.
It's a beautiful place.
It is. It is. Well, let's talk just a little bit about, in past generations, folks tended to get a job. They kind of plugged in. They worked 40 or 50 years, and then they retired, and then who knows what. They bought a boat and sailed or something. Is that same kind of pathway realistic or even a possibility to you folks today?
For me personally, I would say no. When you find a passion and it becomes something that becomes your whole life, you kind of stick with it. So good case in point, I was offered a job that was really high paying, but I'm staying with the university because that's my home now. And what I do there is really just what I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm. I personally just think it's amazing to love and do what you love. It's a beautiful thing to not have to actually work and to just enjoy yourself. And I'd love to do that one day. Whether or not it's something that can be achieved, I'm not sure, but I'm going to push for it.
Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that point in a minute. But we're into a digital age now, and so things like smartphones are being used as educational tools. What is the classroom like with the advent of technology and texting? And
it's PowerPoint and Moodle, which Moodle is very complicated. It's very complicated.
I've never heard of Moodle.
What is Moodle?
So Moodle is basically the online classroom for homework. It's the extended classroom, I would say, where teachers post assignments, where we can do tests. It's kind of like that open forum between the class and the teacher.
Definitely. There's also a system called iClicker, where a teacher can ask you questions, and then you post your answer by submitting A, B, C, or D on like a little remote, and it's a definite tool that a lot of teachers like to use to see whether or not the kids know what they're being taught.
Does anyone actually go to class?
A lot of the iClickers, they actually use to tell whether or not you have entered class that day. So they can take attendance based off of you using the iClicker as well.
So the iClicker is in the classroom?
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, that's far different from books, isn't it? That's really interesting. Well, then, so let's kind of move on then and talk about something that you both are involved in, which is the coming of the new student center. It's currently being built. Tell us about that.
Well, this is our dream building for dining services. This is our chance to become one of the big leagues, you know, and what we do now, we work off a small line, and what we will do in there, we work off platforms. Excuse me. So we can offer basically amazing food compared to very institutional food.
Very true. And my sense is, it's a bit like a food court, mm-hmm. where you'll have the option to go have Mexican or Asian or pizza or anything along that line.
Exactly. It's going to be amazing. I myself have been giving speeches to parents at orientation for the incoming fall freshmen, and it's just an amazing opportunity to get to be able to explore all different food options and not be limited to just burgers for a night or just pizza. So.
Yeah, and the menu is very extensive, mm-hmm. and having options for gluten-free or any other special dietary needs.
Definitely. There's always a way to be able to access food. There's mm-hmm. never a limitation.
Mm-hmm. Good. And the details, just the little details that must be involved in planning something like this.
They're scary.
Definitely.
They're very scary, but it's fascinating. And that's actually what has driven my interest into food service. It involves creativity, which again, you know, anybody who can be creative in their job, that's super important. And they are very fine. You know, it's a matter of noticing corner guards on the walls to how many spatulas you need per platform.
Right. And how many spatulas you need per chef.
Absolutely, yes.
Laura, what are some of the things you've kind of discovered?
I've actually mostly discovered a love for the student center in general, I blame Christopher. I had no idea what I was taking on when I came into dining services, but just small details such as compostable wine glasses are something that people were talking about. The difference between a 5-cent cup and a 40-cent cup, one that's sleek and compostable and one that will never be reused again.
Wow.
So it's amazing.
It's really fascinating that Sonoma State is moving this direction. I mean, so many large campuses are just opening the doors to franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Big chains, McDonald's, mm-hmm. Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. hate to mention them. But do you have a sense of why, how Sonoma State moved in this direction rather than taking what I would seem is the easy way out and just opening the campus to fast food?
Well, it's funny you say that, because if the director had her way, she would have Chick-fil-A on the campus. That is probably one of her favorite childhood foods. But it really is about the quality and the experience, and we are here in the heart of wine country, mm-hmm. and students come here expecting that. Their families, come from that background, and they expect quality food, and they expect quality experiences and services. So what we will have in the student center is just that, and gluten-free. We're diversifying what we can offer to people. We are, trying to engage in cultural foods as well and being more authentic.
Definitely.
And definitely we're trying to stay away from the freezer, and nothing will be in the freezer except for ice cubes.
In Sonoma County, there's no reason to
not at all
frozen food.
It's literally under our feet, all of it.
Right.
And you mentioned, too, that with the advent of the Green Music Center, that has been a wonderful stripe on Sonoma State's arm, and we're bringing in world-class acts.
We really are. It's amazing. The value of Sonoma State University has just gone up so much with the amazing opportunities we've had, the Green Music Center and the new Student Center opening and whatnot.
So is the big picture behind having a student center more than just creating a space where kids come to eat and hang out?
I think that that's more of a label. And I don't think the students quite understand what they're getting yet. But for us on the organization end, it's huge, because we can change all those things that they want changed. And in the way that the facility is created, it's fully student-driven, and all the spaces are for students. And it will create opportunities for concerts, larger dances, anything that a student wants to put on there. It becomes their home. And I think that in conjunction with the Green Music Center, that's what really is going to be the impact for students.
I like when you're talking, your face lights up. And so I know that this is something that is in touch with your passion.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
And you're finding yourself more and more.
Yes. Yeah.
As the whole job kind of develops and the student center becomes more of a reality, which I think it's scheduled to open in September.
Mm-hmm.
That's the date they're shooting for anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Good. As all of us kind of go through the changes that are happening in our world, many 40 and 50-something people are finding themselves suddenly having to find a job or needing to create a career change for themselves. We're no longer happy with just going to work, coming home, and going back to work on Monday. I sense that many of the 20-somethings, younger people today, are much more in touch with this whole idea of, I'm not going to give up my time. I'm not going to do something that I'm not happy doing. What would you say to the person who is the 40 or 50-something person suddenly needing to make a job change?
I actually, I can really relate to this. I would tell them, go for it. You need to. There's no reason to not try and achieve something different or to just be happy every single day.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, actually, I tell her all the time, come live in Sonoma County. You'll love it. Get out of Los Angeles. Because she's 50-something years old, and she's not in a, significantly happy place. So just change and just achieve all that you can. Be happy.
Mm-hmm. And it ties in with quality of life.
Definitely.
Across the board.
Absolutely.
And balance.
Absolutely.
So talk a bit about gay life on campus, LGBT life on campus.
I think our campus is very accepting. We have a very diverse campus. I know they appreciate more diversity, but it is very diverse. I think the students themselves have not seen that in terms of, you know, gay or lesbian students. I don't think they understand that it really is a safe environment. And I do know that there's a lot of hesitation for people to be open about themselves, and that is unfortunate. You know, my experience with Sonoma State was amazing, and I've not had that many supportive people in my life ever. So to really be in an environment like that, you know, and getting involved is another aspect of that too. So rather than sitting in the dorms, even a job, I mean, my job with dining, I started washing dishes, actually washing pots. So, you know, taking out garbages, and I found a passion and I voiced that passion, and it took me somewhere. And through the people I've met, I have a safety blanket, you know, I have my support group. And I think people who are very hesitant, again, it's unfortunate, and I hope that they do find that niche.
And we were talking a bit earlier, there are housing arrangements. You mentioned, you made an interesting comment about a fairly significant number of transgender students.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We actually have a group of kids that came to speak to one of my classes, and they talked about their struggles with being transgender and how the community reacts to it and whatnot. And we actually have an area on our campus that is gender neutral. So it's an area where people can feel safe and not have to feel uncomfortable with, I don't even know, going to get a snack in the middle of the night and be cautious of their roommates. So definitely.
And the good thing about that too is it allows them to live with their friends who may be of the opposite sex, you know, and there may not be that attraction, but the school recognizes that, you know, you need your support group and you need that in your living environment, and that's really important.
And when the kids go through freshman orientation, is all of that given as an option?
I believe that the kids would probably talk to another organization other than housing, or maybe they would specify that within housing, so that way they can meet their needs.
What would you say then to an incoming freshman who's out on their own for the first time, they're meeting people who are vastly different than their upbringing or who they are even?
Hide nothing. Be yourself. I hid it a little bit my freshman year, and it wasn't so much that I was scared. I just didn't really, I didn't feel the need to. But as it came out, you know, people just, again, they're supportive. And it's, I think everybody kind of fears the worst, but if they're your friend, they're going to support you no matter what. And if they don't support you, then you got to question that. But again, my experience probably became even more better as people became to know who I was.
And a lot of that had to do with you being comfortable.
Absolutely.
With who you are.
Absolutely.
And not much different from what, you know, our first guest was talking about with respect to. He was hiding for a long time. He knew it about himself, but he kept it hidden.
Right.
And so being on a campus, I'm thinking, where people's minds are being opened up, there's a little bit of change that goes on in terms of the process behind becoming more accepting or just becoming more educated about differences in groups and cultures and people and orientations.
There is a transition, I would say, and but I think with media, too, it's becoming more open, prevalent, and people our age are more, they're exposed to it. So it's not as big of a deal, and people who may not be as exposed to it, you know, they may come from a background or a family who isn't as open about it, and unfortunately they pick up those beliefs as well.
Right. It's great having the information available to you, but you still need that support group. You still need to feel safe before you come out, especially to your family.
Exactly. I think Sonoma State tries to offer that. And one of my best friends happens to be gay, and I don't understand the there's no difference. There's no difference. So
did you always feel that way?
I don't think I have ever had an issue. I know I have family that are very, not necessarily against, but they're stuck in old terms, I'd like to say, with their views on gay people and whatnot. I myself, if no one ever says anything wrong to me, I have no issue with them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if they're purple or have like five legs or like to eat cherries. I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me.
Well spoken from someone in dining services.
Definitely.
So I know it's cliche to say, well, the future is in your hands, but in terms of giving us a little verbal text, you know, like 140 words or less, let's think ahead 10 years. What would you text to us about the next 10 years? Your visions, your hopes, your...
It's like an oral exam.
Oh, no.
What really resonates with me is carpe diem, seize the day. And I think that my generation is very... We're able to just brush things off and really to just accept it immediately, and, you know, it is what it is. And I think that if you can have that attitude in life, and you're not afraid of taking risks, you'll go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with Christopher. He actually just said it is what it is, and one of my favorite sayings, it is what it is, it's kind of ridiculous. And that's truly what life is.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you what, we're running down to the last minute of the hour, and so we're going to have to wrap it up. But I thank you for taking the time to come and be with us and just share a little bit of your perspective and who you are about the world we're living in today. It's an important kind of communication to bring us all together intergenerationally, because we're all in it together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's been my pleasure.
We want to thank all of our guests tonight and thank you for listening. Please join us here for Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. here on KRCB Public Radio. You can listen live online at krcb.org. You may listen to every Outbeat Radio show at outbeatradio.org. Michaela, Mary, and I will be back next month, July 21st, with local author Emilio Gonzalez-Lane and Jennifer Adams, owner of Mavericks, which is hosting a weekly LGBT dance party. Happy Father's Day to everyone out there, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
We'll all see you next time.